afternoon, but I saw where there had been another shooting, a mass shooting down in San Antonio, Texas. It was at I think it was a Baptist church. And before I left, the report was that the shooter had been killed, and there were 20 other people dead. But they don't have all the information. And you see this, and we see so much of it happening, and a lot of other things that happen. And though I don't think it's all for one reason, I think there's a lot of things that factor into that. And one of the things our society has just about forgot, and it's just been driven out of their mind, is that there's a need to fear God. And I think that there's just a lack of it today. Now, when you look at what's said in the Scriptures, you find that sometimes fear is terror. And sometimes, though, it's respect and awe. And so you have to look at the context to see which one it is. But the lack of fear that's exhibited in the world today, I think, is pretty well evident. And one of the things that we need to concentrate on is that the things that happen out here in the world, oftentimes, I don't know what the word would be, bleed over into the church. And you find attitudes then developing in the church that mirror things that happen in the world. And having a lack of fear can get into the church as well. The absence of fear in cases like this produces something. And it produces contempt and a lack of respect. And yeah, you know, you do have that in the church. And what's fascinating is that some fail to realize that a lack of godly fear produces nothing profitable. And actually, that's something that's unacceptable to God. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 17. If you address as Father the one who impartially judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay on earth. I might add that sometimes the word fear could have a little bit of mixture with terror as well as respect and awe, and this might be one of those cases where you find that. But as we investigate the subject of fear, and especially with fearing God, the first place we ought to start is in the Old Testament. And fear is found a lot in the Old Testament. I don't think that there's any surprise in that. And a lot of people might think that that's all they did in Old Testament times was just fear God. Well, no, they did lots of other things. But fearing God was something that was prominent in the Old Testament. I have here, lacking better words, I have here that it was something that was a common denominator. And finding one passage that has that idea, I've got Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 6. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in His ways and to fear Him. And so there you have it there. And the fearing Him, it's likely there to, you know, fear falling into the hands of the living God, as it says in the book of Hebrews. And oftentimes, you know, fear is something that helps us to do the thing that we ought to do. I think that there should be a good, healthy fear that we have. Just made a trip down to West Virginia and back, And there's just places down there where, you know, you got to pay attention to the speed limit. It's not all the same, even on the interstate. You get down around Canton and Akron, down in through there, and you try to pay attention to that. Well, why do you try to pay attention to that? Well, I don't know about anybody else. I have a fear of getting a speeding ticket. I don't want to have to pay the fine that goes along with that, you know. But, you know, they have things like this set up, rules and regulations, and there has to be something behind it. Or if there was nothing behind it, everybody would just, well, they just drive however they wanted to drive. If there was nothing behind what God had to say, just do whatever you want to do. If there wasn't something behind His commandments, people would just die. Well, you know, we'll just keep the ones that we like and let the others all go. And that wasn't what happened in the Old Testament. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. Also, we'll take a look at chapter 9, verse 10 here. But Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, a passage like unto this, it's not a whole lot different, is over here in Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10, where it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." So it's the beginning of knowledge, wisdom? Sure, it is. And we would argue with that at all. It's a good motivator. And then back up to Psalms 103. Psalms 103, and we'll take a look at verses 10 through 13. Psalm 103. My pages are stuck together. There we go. Psalms 103, 10 through 11. "He has not dealt with us according to our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is His loving kindness toward those who fear Him. Just as far as the east is from the west, so far has He removed our transgressions from us. Just as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear Him." So what are we talking about here? Well, you look at this and you see there's fear mentioned here a couple of times, and it's the basis for a righteous life. Well, sure it is. Yeah, that's what he's saying. And then there's the passages that we know that are at, well, one of them I'm sure we know. It's in Ecclesiastes. At the end of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, and we're probably well familiar with verse 13, but what I want us to do is look at 13 and 14. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every man. This is the whole duty of man, the old translation has. But now look at verse 14. "God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil." He's going to bring it all to judgment because He knows all these things. You can't hide these things. So the fear of God and the fear of the judgment that will come, good healthy fear along that line, allows us then to have this desire in us to keep the commandments. Now, the next thing that we look at is fear in the New Testament. We're going to start a place at someone in the New Testament. And this is a very well-known individual. All you have to do is talk to some people who profess some level of religion. And sooner or later, you hear about the thief on the cross. You turn to Luke chapter 23. There's the thief on the cross there. We'll look at verses 39 through 43. Now, at one point, both of these men had been reviling and mocking Jesus. But you can about imagine, as a little time goes on, one of them changes his mind. He stops this. And you wonder what's the reason for it. Starting in verse 39, one of the criminals, not both of them now, just one of them, who were hanged there, was hurling abuse at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourselves and us." But the other answered, and rebuking him. So he's changed his direction, hasn't he? He said, "Do you not even fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed are suffering justly, for we are receiving what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he was saying, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you shall be with me in paradise." The thief on the cross, he's asking the other one, "Don't you fear God?" You know, the implication is, I realize the fix that we're both in. Don't you fear God? Because the next thing for us is to meet him. I think that this man now had fear of God and respect and awe for him, and then rebukes the other man for not having that. And the other man could keep up his abuse because the fear of God was lacking. In Romans chapter 3, a lot of times we're familiar with verse 23. "Where all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." But before that, starting in verse 10, the Apostle Paul here quotes from a number of different places in the Old Testament. Just a whole bunch of them. Psalms, Isaiah, etc. And he really has kind of a gloomy picture here of the condition of people. None righteous, not even one. None who understands, none who seeks God. You see how it is. He talks about them and how their throat's an open grave, and the poison of asps is under their lips. Their feet are swift to shed blood. We think, boy, it's really bad today and all. He's describing how things were then. But then he's taking things that were said hundreds of years before. Things were bad then too. But you get down to verse 18. And here's where he kind of sums up. This is the last thing he says from all the quotations. He says, "There is no fear of God before their eyes." That's from Psalms 36 verse 1. So that's his analysis of things. And you can understand that by that statement, "There is no fear of God before their eyes," he's saying there should be. There ought to be. There really needs to be. But because there's not, well, then people are just more or less, you know, out of control. We're all familiar with Peter going to the house of Cornelius with the gospel in Acts chapter 10. Turn over there. And we'll take a look at verse 34. When we get there, and I want you to take note that this is where Paul starts to talk to them. Peter starts to talk to them about salvation. And he says there in verse 34, "I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality. He's no respecter of persons. But in every nation," that would include the Gentiles, Jews, whoever, "the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome to him." I think that's a real good place to start, isn't it? When you think about some of the things that Paul had to say and how things were then, that's a good place to start. That's a good place to start today. Sure. Some motivation for that. And also, there were churches in New Testament times, Acts chapter 9, and verse 31, there were those that were in Judea and Galilee and Samaria. They were walking in the fear of the Lord. Acts chapter 9 and verse 31. So yeah, there's fear in the Old Testament. There's fear in the New Testament. Kind of a balance of things there. Now we go back over here to 1 Peter chapter 1. Where we left off there just a minute ago. Now there's some facts about fear that we can find here in 1 Peter and other places as well. But we're supposed to have this fear as obedient children. Look at verse 14. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in your ignorance. And he's leading up to this point here. So be as obedient children. And I think to myself what's said over in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12, how that there were those now, and here's what they need to do. Now he's writing this to Christians. This isn't something for folks out here in the world. And he tells them, now you work out your salvation with what? With fear and trembling. I wonder if that's always being done now. You know, if there's not the fear and the trembling, what replaces that? What do you think might be there if that's absent? Might there be that lack of respect? Might there be some contempt? Might there be arrogance in the absence of those things? Well, yeah, that's entirely possible, sure. But as obedient children, fear and trembling. You know, we all do that. We learn these things and we realize that there's a plus and minus in what we're called upon to do. In verse 15 of 1 Peter, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all your behavior. To be holy. I can't remember who it was now, but there's a preacher years ago in a sermon on 1 Peter here on this section. And he said, you know, to be holy. He said, I wish people would understand that being holy doesn't mean that you're living in a hole. That somehow or another, this is below everybody's expectation and it's over there and it's some kind of a miserable existence in being holy. And I thought, well, I think he's right. That's not what it means. Actually, to be holy would mean, it's the idea we were talking about in Bible class this morning. You know, the same word that's translated and derivatives of it, from the Greek word, is translated some places holy. It's the same word that you're going to find as sanctified or sanctify. And saints comes from the same word as well. We don't have a whole lot of problem when we talk about, you know, the idea of sanctification or saints, you know, Christians being called saints, for example. Not a whole lot of problem with that. But then all of a sudden we would get over and we'd start talking about, you know, be holy, well, then everybody kind of starts dragging their feet, wondering about that. What's the difference? Actually, there is no difference in that. What is it doing there? Well, it's telling us to be distinct from the world. We talked about that this morning. Like those things that are consecrated in the temple, we're supposed to be consecrated to God. Also, we are to bring holiness to maturity. In other words, to an end, if you will. That's supposed to be seen in us as we develop holiness. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 1. Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Perfecting means it's the idea of bringing something to completion. Becoming a completed work. And we all ought to be aiming for that. And then go back to 1 Peter chapter 1 again. Now where we started in verse 17. Let's look what it says there right at the beginning. 1 Peter chapter 1 verse 17. If you address as Father. If you address as Father. If you call on the Father. There we go. Call on the Father. He's not going to respect persons. It says impartially judges in the New American Standard. If you call on the Father, who, without respect of persons, judges according to each one's work. You think about that. It's not who you are. It's what you are. That's what matters. And it's personal because it's according to each one's work. We're not going to be able to hide behind someone else. I think too many times the idea is on the part of folks is, oh, well, you know, I'm a member of the church and I've got it made. Tickets punched. I'm on my way to heaven. Nothing matters after this. I've met lots of folks, I think, that entertain that idea. But we don't hide in a group or think, you know, that on the judgment day, there's a rush of millions of people and I'll be one of them in the stampede. Nobody will notice me. I don't think it's going to be that way. No, it says here it'll be personal according to each one's work. And then one more thing in verse 17. We're to conduct ourselves in fear. But notice the latter part of this. Now, during the time of your stay on earth, how long is that time of stay on earth? You know, I was putting this lesson together, well, it started on 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I got to thinking about, I'd gone online to look at somebody's statistics, you know. They passed away. I wanted to check on a birthday is actually what it was. So I went on a place that a lot of times has records of things like that. So I was looking there. And they had a picture of a tombstone. The tombstone of this fellow. And there it was. And you know how it is. On the tombstone they got the dates. Here's the date when he's born. And here's the date when he died. And right in between, you got that little dash. Right? That dash is the whole life. Long or short. The whole life is that dash between two dates. And on a tombstone, it doesn't say much. But if you know the person, you know that there's a whole lot involved in that dash. That's what? Well, that's what it says here. That's the time of your stay on earth. Now, the person I was looking up was a member of the church, a preacher. And I knew him well, and I thought to myself, all of the things, and it's just, you know, could I list them all? I don't think I could. I'd miss some. I'd leave some out. I wouldn't mean to. But, you know, it's just that little dash in there, the time that we have, we'll try and fill it up as much as we can and do all that we can. But realize, you know, we're temporary residents too, because that's what it's going to have for all of us. You know, one of these days, there'll be me, there'll be my birth date, and then there'll be the other, and there'll be the dash between the dates. The time of your stay. We talk about people that might have lived a long time. How about Methuselah? 969 years. That's a long time. And yet, that's a short time compared to time itself. Even Methuselah's life was a vapor that appeared for a little while and then vanished away. David had a child born to Bathsheba that lived just like a few days. Like a vapor. Appears for a little while, vanishes away. No guarantee for any of that. But the time of our stay, during the time of our stay on earth. But we don't remain there, do we? No. No. We're temporary residents. Because in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 20, it tells us our citizenship is in heaven. That's where our home's at. That's the real final destination for all of us. And I think that we need to be keeping that in mind. And as we're temporary residents, one of the things that we need to do and hold forth and be reminding ourselves is that there needs to be some fear of God to keep us on the straight and narrow. In Hebrews chapter 10, I mentioned this a moment ago. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 31, you might take your songbooks and turn to the song that's been selected. Hebrews chapter 10 verse 31 has, it's a terrifying thing, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. I think those words are in there to motivate the listeners to stay on the straight and narrow. Well, of course they are. And then what about Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 28? Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe. The old translation has, with reverence and godly fear. You think that's in there to keep us on the straight and narrow? Of course it is. So it's a lesson for someone to obey the gospel and a lesson for someone to be faithful always to the gospel message. We'd be happy to assist someone to obey the gospel tonight, or we'd be happy to pray with you and for you to make correction. Whatever the case might be, if we can help, why don't you come all together, we stand and sing.